choose me and let me live. I have so much love to give you. Let me live. You cannot know the difference I could make.
The image she that you have of her has to be removed. She's your neighbor. And that means, how do you speak to her? Just as you would to any other ordinary person. Okay? You have to be fearful of her. At the same time, you have to remove from her image your presence as some type of terrorist group that she has to get by, that she's afraid of, you see? So you can't have that confrontation going at her. You can't be there. And of course, there are people who are there with signs screaming and yelling, you see? You murderers, you killers. You've seen this, okay? You've seen this. And the poor woman comes and she goes, they'll kill me. Okay? They're saying, don't kill, or we'll kill you. You know, it's always incredible. So the image becomes totally different when she comes and she sees people who are really praying. Okay? They're not even looking at her. The prayers pray. The prayers pray. So the people who are praying, I tell them, look, your job is not to be gawking, looking around. Your job is to pray. All right? Sometimes I have them turn in on themselves like a circle, and they turn in on themselves. And we get, I go to a carpet place where they make rugs, but if they're putting a rug here, there's corners that they have to cut. So we get the odd end cuts for about a quarter apiece, right? And then we have them as the kneelers. We put them on the sidewalk, okay, that they can kneel down. We have a few camp chairs for sitting. And we have the police barrier for the prédu. Some people are kneeling with the rosy hanging over the police barrier, okay? Some are sitting down, some are standing, you see? But it's a whole prayer situation. I remember there was one day the fellow came along and he just saw this whole prayerful presence there, and he said, is the church inside? I said, no, it's hell in there. I said, the church is out here. This is the church, because the people were singing and praying, see? But that's what you want. You want a prayerful, there's different ways of being present to each other, as friends, as indifferent, as enemies, whatnot. When you're praying, you make the presence of God. People think when you're praying, God. Very important, because God's left out of the picture here. The child belongs to God. So the prayerful presence. The child belongs to God, and when they see people praying, you're not threatening, they begin to think of God. And God knows what I'm doing. You see, this is God's child. But they're praying for me. They're praying for me. Okay? That's an interesting thing. Now, next to, we said that the people praying, we set up that exhibit for life. So you don't walk around with signs and everything else, sign in your face type thing. They have to walk over and look at the exhibit for life on their own. But we normally put it near where the people are praying. And we don't put the prayers next to the doors. You give a wide berth to the counselors. You put them in positions whereby they can be seen. But they need not be right next or next to the counselor. Matter of fact, the counselor should have a wide berth. They can talk with privacy with the individual person coming. And they should talk, we normally do, one at a time. Not a whole group coming to the woman. One at a time. Give her privacy. See, if you need somebody else to call them over to join, that's secondarily. Okay? So, when the woman is coming, you want to remove the idea of that it is a threat. So, if you're standing there with your little pamphlet, and you have a rosary bead in your hand, and you're no longer the image of a terrorist, and you don't go meeting her, but it is important to try to meet her at a distance from the door, if you can, rather than right at the door itself. Right? And you, what you do is, if she's coming down the block here, okay, and I see it, I sort of move, but then I will stop, okay, and I'll turn around, and I'm praying the rosary, so she sees a wide berth here. She can walk by. There's going to be no threat at all getting into this clinic. And what we do is, at the end, just before she's about 10 feet away, don't walk up to her. Let her walk by you. See? But when she's about 10 feet away, you turn sort of on an angle. On an angle with the rosary. And as she's coming, okay, you look at her and you look into her eyes. You look into her eyes and you say, good morning, mom. Good morning, mom. Okay? And then you say, I know no one comes here unless they have problems, and those problems have to be real, or they would not be coming here. Okay? And that's not condemnatory, is it? That really is, my God, you understand. Okay? So you're not saying, don't kill the baby. You're not saying, what are you doing? The blood's going to be on you. No, you're saying, mom, I know anybody that comes here have problems, and they're real, or they would not be coming here. So I usually start off saying, good morning, God bless you. Here, take this. Now what I do, I look into her eyes. Watch this now, okay? I look into her pretty eyes, and while I'm looking into her eyes, I put this near her greedy hands. And anything gets near our hands, we take, you see, almost unconsciously. See? So, and once you give it, it's like marriage vows. Never take it back. See? Because they say, I'm not going there for that. Oh, you start to believe everybody's not going there for that. The abortion is out of business. Okay? Out of business. My place, 70-80% of the money's made is from abortions. And I have to listen all morning, I'm not going there for that. And I know. I know. From the abortionist himself, from the owner. 80% of the money is from the abortions. Right? So they're in a state of denial. They sincerely mean that. I'm not going there for that. Well, they're going right in. They're actually denying what they're doing right onto the table. If you can understand this. Okay? Because they're not killers. And in my case, it's okay. I'm not going there for that, for that, for that. You see? And they are. And they are. Okay? So what happens is that when the person comes, then you are, first of all, you're getting their goodwill, their docility, and their attention. You don't begin the substance of your talk unless you have a good exordium. This is Ciceronian rhetoric, okay? But this fact. You must have the attention of the audience and the goodwill of the audience and the teachableness of the audience before you make your main point. If you make your main point and they're not listening, they're not paying attention, or they're not disposed, you're talking to yourself. You follow that? So your attention, goodwill, and teachableness, docility, is very important before you make your main point. So here, you've got their attention and their goodwill by saying, I know no one comes here unless they have problems, and the problems are real, or they would not be coming here. And as you're saying that, you're looking into the person's eyes, and as you look into the eyes, you put this into their hands. You don't make them go searching for it, you see? For example, you take this, the poor guy, sorry, this is very funny, Mike Marino, my Italian co-partner who's out there counseling, okay? Many times Italians talk with their hands. Have you ever noticed that? I had Father Mahoney, whose mother was Italian. I didn't know that until I saw him on the telephone. He's talking to the guy on the telephone saying, not two, it's three. It's three. Can't you get that? I said, John, it's a telephone. It's not a TV. What are you doing? See, I realized if I handcuffed him, I could shut him up for a week. See? But poor Mike, he would be talking, you know, and the person is trying to get the material. See, it's going all over the place. I tell you about that. I tell you about the old Italian fella. Did I tell him that? About the Italian? There's an Italian guy, and he's coming up for the 50th wedding anniversary of his wife. See? And he's being interviewed, and he says, you know, for the past 25 years, my wife and I have not had one single argument. Not even a disagreement. He said, that's incredible. He said, that's the truth. They said, what did you do for your 25th? He said, after my 25th, he says, I took my wife to Italy. And I said, what are you planning for your 50th? He says, after my 50th, I think I'm going to go back to Italy and get my wife. But But Mike, you know, he moves his hand. I had to say, Mike, they can't get it because you're saying, take this, and as you're talking, you keep moving. You see your hand. See? Put it into their hands. Put it into their hands, okay? So don't make them, if they're not going to take it, that they have to move their hands away. Okay? In other words, if you're putting it into their hands, and you can do that if you're looking at them in their eyes while you're doing it, all of a sudden it's in their hands. Okay? I like to play games when I have young people coming. Okay? I may have three or four. That is a challenge. I get the three or four in 13 seconds. Okay? Into their hands. This is true. When the young people are coming, sometimes I have the material, I have the big smile, and I say, they know. I think, you know, without saying anything, see? I'm going to get you. See? And so they're coming. I said, okay. And they all end up taking the material. It's great. I had one fellow. It was interesting. It was we did a prayer vigil with the helpers in Phoenix, Arizona. It's a drive-in situation. And we had the prayerful presence. Everything was beautiful. But the counselors were screaming across the driveway, take this material, see? Breaking the whole atmosphere, you know. I said, you can't do that. And they said, what am I going to do? I said, well, use ingenuity. What do you mean? I said, well, suppose, let me give you an example. I said, suppose that woman walking across the yard, she's deaf. What do you do? I said, well, let's make it more difficult. Suppose she's deaf and you're mute. Okay, what do you do? She's looking at me. I said, give me the material. See, next one comes, you see, here I am, mute, and she's deaf, and I got to get this material, and she's walking across the yard, okay? Now, she can, well, we can see and hear, you know, in terms of what we do, but I'm going to play deaf and she's mute. And how are we going to do this? Well, it's simple. She comes, and I go, please. See? Help me. She stops in her tracks and she comes down like a deaf mute. See? And I go out to her like a deaf mute and we exchange and she takes it, she came back out. You see? There's always. Didn't break the atmosphere. People were singing and praying as she was doing this. See, it was beautiful. It was beautiful. See? But if you're out there, because once again, you got to rely upon God. Really rely upon God. Not saying, it's you who are going to do this. See? You don't turn around anybody. It requires a change of heart. Okay? I said, the most important people at that site are the prayers. Take my word for it. Okay? Most important. See? The backup spiritual support prayers. When you are there, you must pray before, during, and after counseling. So what you do is, the person comes, you're going to get this material into their hands, getting their goodwill, docility, and attention. So they're coming, you say, God bless you, good morning. I know no one comes here unless they have difficulties and they're real or they would not be coming here. Take this. This is help for you. Okay? Yes. You see, she did it. Thanks be to God. Let's rejoice. Okay. Now, I only have one of these. I left them all at home for you. Okay. All right. So, now, after she takes it, see, you say, look, I know people mean well, but they don't always tell us the right answer to human problems, even when they mean well. So they may say, even your friends can say to you, it's okay to take the child out in your case. Take the child out. That's what they use, take it out. It, until they keep it, and it's a child. I don't want it. You see, it. So, we dehumanize, depersonalize, see, until it's my child. I said, although they mean well, and I give them a simple example. I said, suppose you had a high fever. Suppose you had a high fever, and what we did was, I gave you a glass of cold water. And it would seem to remove your fever, would it not? But about 5 minutes later, 10 minutes later, the fever comes back with a vengeance. Wrong answer. If I gave you medicine, and in the beginning, the fever doesn't leave. Seems like, what use was that? But suddenly it leaves and doesn't come back. Right answer, wrong answer. You see? So what happens is this. I said, people mean well, and they tell you that they'll tell the woman to take it out, and what's going to happen, of course, is the fever is going to come back because it's the wrong answer. Because She is told by society. This is the great thing you have to, when you're counseling, you got to break through this. They are told abortion will bring back yesterday. Everything, they can get on with their lives once again. This is the great solution to all social, economic, moral, spiritual, all problems are resolved by an abortion today. See? If you're too young, have an abortion. See? If you're too old, take it out. If you can't afford it, take it out. If you're going to school, take it out. If you're not married, take it out. If you're physically sick, take it out. Every social, economic, physical problem is resolved with an abortion. And it's all a lie. Because the last state is worse than the first. Because when they take that kid out, what happens is this, I say to the mothers, it comes back, the fever, with a vengeance. Because the first reaction is, I take the kid out and I say, oh, but thanks be to God, my womb is empty, I can get on with my life again. I won't make that mistake again. See? And then, 10 or 15 minutes later, in the recovery room, not outside, in the recovery room, the mother will say, in the beginning, oh, my womb is empty, thanks be to God. And then she will say 15 minutes later, oh my God, my womb is empty. Because it's everything contrary to what a woman is about. Okay? So when a woman is pregnant, she's more conscious of a baby crying. She's more conscious of baby things. She's more conscious of everything. Her whole body is changing. Her whole body is changing. Physiologically, you see? Psychologically, emotionally. This is real. Okay? And suddenly, you have ripped this kid out, and the body doesn't know that. Her emotional, her psychological, her physical thing is all very still conscious and drawn and geared towards life, new life. See? And so what happens is this, is that when they take the child out, I say to the mother, the reality is this, she will say, oh, my problem is solved, yesterday is returned, and then 15 minutes later, she's going, oh my God, my womb is empty, and tomorrow's peace is gone, starting tonight. Okay? And no one will be there to help her. No one will be there to give her consolation, because it's her right, it's her choice. What's your problem? Okay? There's no sharing. So, now, I say to the people, and we have this form here, that did you know? This is very, very powerful in bringing about turnarounds. This did you know? The most powerful thing, of course, is the rosary. We give the rosaries to people. It's incredible, okay? What happens with it. But this is the did you know? Now, I will say to the mother, I take this out, and I say, look, did you know that, and I show this picture here, I said, do you know that this is what the child looks like for most of the women who are now inside this abortion clinic? This is what the child looks like. It's true. Most abortions in the United States are done between 8 and 12 weeks. They tell the mother how many weeks she's pregnant. Why? To determine the price. They show her an ultrasound machine. They take an ultrasound picture to find out how many weeks she's pregnant to determine the price. But they will not let her see the ultrasound picture. If they do, the person who does so will be fired. When she has twins, they show her the ultrasound picture. Why? Why? You find that out in the Dan, don't you? When they have twins, they come out so frequently? That's because they show them. Yeah, they will.
They have to prove to the woman that it's twins.
Why?
Charge.
They're charging twice as much. The price doubles for twins. It's a nothing. But if it's twins, we charge you twice the price because we're killing two babies, not one. So we have to show you the ultrasound pictures to prove to you why we're charging you twice as much. Now, people say, for my place, it's $450 to start. Right? But every week further into gestation, it's another $100. You know, they advertise $500 for an abortion. Yeah, but that's for the first 12 weeks. If you're 13 weeks, it's $600. If you're 14 weeks, it's $700. It's $800. It could be $2,000. Now that is off the top. If you have medical coverage, if you have medical coverage, they really go to work on you. In my place, for example, it's $500 for an abortion, we'll say. But if you have medical coverage, they'll charge $4,000. And it's paid by the medical company, the insurance companies. What they'll do is the woman walks in and they'll say, they break it down into all areas. Counseling, management, receptionist, recovery room, operating room, anesthesiologist. They break it down. And they have all these categories listed. By the end of the bill, in 15 minutes, they have $4,000. My place won the prize. It was on CBS TV. They did a Shame on You media investigation of how these people were being ripped off. Okay, and the one who won the prize was the place where I was at. They were charging up to $4,000 an abortion every 15 minutes. Now, that's four times, that would be $16,000 an hour for 10 hours. That's pretty good day's work, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Incredible. Incredible. Right? And the insurance companies, you say, why in the name of God are you paying it? In other words, if you pay the person directly, it's $500. You pay the abortionist, it's $4,000. You have to be a genius here to figure this out. Why are you not paying directly the patient rather than the doctor when they're charging you $4,000? They're charging you eight times as much. Huh? The sign is on the wall: $500 for an abortion. But if they give the medical coverage, it's $4,000. Well, I guess it's cheaper, isn't it, than having a Down syndrome kid? I guess it's cheaper in the long run, for a lot of other things. And they give me the line and the dance that it's hard to beat doctors when they put them on trial. The jury believes anything they say. So they don't even bother fighting it. They just pay it. But it's another absolute smells, okay? You wonder if there is not some money underneath the table somewhere here that the insurance company would pay such an exorbitant price for what was the ongoing prices on the wall. Okay? Amazing. But anyway, so what happens is this: the mother is not allowed to see the sonogram unless she has twins, and that's only because they're going to charge her twice as much. They have to prove it's twins. But even then, if they can, they'll sort of fuzz it up. Fuzz it up. They won't let them see a clear focus, if possible. But you'll find out that they will come out. Now what happens is the mother's inside, and when the mother's inside, and I say to the people, did you know that this is what the average person inside, this is the size of their child? And that's the truth. Right? And I said, did you know, and I take it this way, did you know, you see these feet here, that's what your feet and my feet looked like when we were 10 weeks in our mother's womb. 10 weeks. I said, you know, my mom had a very difficult time finding shoes for me. I said, but eventually she did. You see? She must have. My feet are nice and warm and everything. You see, you get to relax. You know, see? Now, then you open it further and you say, now what you're doing here is you're driving home the humanity of the child. You're saying the child is alive. You were once a child. Right? And now you say, do you know what's going to happen inside? In 4 minutes' time, they're going to take this child and put the child through what they call a suction machine. Okay? And the suction machine basically is going to grind the child up. It will. Okay? And what you do is you open it up and you say, you see, this is what happens. And they grind it up. Okay? And you say, you see the little feet? You still can see it. Then you open it up again. What you open it up this way, you say, you see the little feet? You still can see the feet. You point it out again. You close it again. You say, you see the little arm? You open it up, you still can see the arm. Now what happens is this, I don't know if you know it. A suction machine is about 28 times stronger than the average vacuum cleaner. In the first 10, 11 weeks, this calcium buildup in the arms and bones of the child is not strong enough to resist a suction machine, a vacuum at that rate. It breaks up. Okay? After that, it doesn't break up, so they have to go in. I'll just explain it to you, the different ways they have the abortion. See? So what happens is they will suck the kid out into a bottle. It comes through a tube, and when the parts come, the thing jumps, and goes into a glass container, a tube that has a net like a sock across the top. So the parts are caught in the sock and the blood goes through. And there's a person inside the abortion mill who takes the parts off the sock and puts it on the table and puts the kid together. And they number the child, 1 to 10. 1 is the head and on down, 10 being the feet. And the person is supposed to say, 1 to 10 is fine, complete, or number 7, I don't see 7. Means the arms. The arms are missing. You got to go back in, doc, and get the arms. Understand this? Because we don't, you're going to have an infection. You'll be back here, problems. Go back in, continue to vacuum, to clean, okay? You know what they do. So, have people do that inside these clinics. How they do this, I do not know, but they do it as a living, every day, okay? So, what they do is this, you're driving home the reality. Now, if the child is beyond 12 weeks, the suction machine will not break the child down, so they put in what they call laminaria. Laminaria is like seaweeds, it sticks. They put it in, and they put it in and absorbs moisture from the mother's body. They put in 50, 100 of them. They put in a lot of them. And absorbs moisture from the mother's body, and overnight it starts to force open the birth canal. See, when the child is full term and it's ready, I told you the child is the one that decides I'm coming. And it causes the contractions and the widening of the opening of the cervix, okay? Which is the opening of the uterus, the cervix. So it opens up and the child is able to come out. But if the child isn't coming, that cervix is closed, okay? So they have to force it open. And what they do is they have the instruments, and I have the pictures here, it's rather interesting. We, at the World Conference for Life in Fatima, they're starting in Austria a Holocaust museum, but it's the abortion Holocaust. And they gather together all the weapons and the facts and information of what's happening to the children. And what they did is they have a cross, and the cross was made up of the materials that were taken from abortion clinics that we have closed. And with all of the various materials, all the instruments of death were found and placed inside of the cross. It required 4 men to carry this cross on the way to Calvary, okay? Just to get a sense of this, I just walk around. But you see the instruments here? See, they're inside this. These are all the instruments of death in these centers, okay? You understand this? These are all instruments that were used in the torture, the slaughter of the unborn, okay? And they have made this cross, which took 4 men to lift. You follow this? I know, because they have these museums of the Holocaust. But my friends, we're topping that. That's child's play in comparison to what's going on. But you know what? They're gathering up the evidence. And there will be a judgment, especially in New York, that was in Nuremberg. And history and God will condemn us. There's no question. Okay? These are instruments that we ourselves got from abortion clinics that we closed, where they walked out and left all the instruments of death behind. Okay? Incredible. Okay? This is fancy here. It's incredible. Okay? The kid is tortured. Right? The kid is tortured. Now, the mother, I explained to the mother that this is what they're going to do. Now, what happens is this: after the 12 weeks, they put these laminaria into force the opening, and it begins to absorb moisture overnight, and it begins to cause an opening. But still, is not enough. The next day, when she comes, they're going to use instruments to dilate, dilate, dilate. Okay? And still, even after they dilate, they need like pliers to go in and catch the kid and pull it off the wall, and they still can't take it out that way. So they crush the parts, taking out one by one, following with the head itself. Hmm? Now, Dr. Martin Haskell in Cincinnati, Ohio, he is the one who started partial birth abortion. Partial birth abortion is they dilate the womb point and they take the kid inside and grab the feet and drag it out head first, feet first. Last thing to come out is the head. It's called partial birth abortion, we call it. Right? Now, with the partial birth abortion, it's excellent. Why? Because, I tell you this, to use the parts from the unborn children, which they do, if it's really crushed through a suction machine, they're pretty useless. But with partial birth abortion, you have a perfectly healthy child who is still alive, kicking in the hands of the doctor outside the womb when they quarter the back. And quartering the back, while the kid is alive and healthy, they take out the various parts. The last thing they do is they suck out the brain cells. I don't think even Hitler did that. Okay? I don't think Hitler did that. So partial birth abortion is very helpful for all the laboratories, all for the organ transplants. At what point does a woman have in her ovaries all the ova that she will have for the rest of her life? At what point is it all there? It's a matter of surprise when people find out at 8 weeks gestation. 8 weeks gestation. The child already has the ova for the rest of her adult life. Now what does that mean? It means the fertility clinics. When a woman comes in and the ovum is infertile or not working, where are we going to get the ova or ovum from? From the aborted child. Men were shipping over from England to America to the fertility clinics, the ova coming from the aborted baby and used with the sperm from some hotshot making his way through Harvard University being paid big dollars. And then you put the two together and you implant them in a surrogate mother. That's what she is, a surrogate mother. And the father is a nothing. And the real father, he probably doesn't even know the child exists. And the mother, the biological mother of the child, was dead before the child was conceived. We call this progress. We call this progress. Understand? This little background. So what they do is, in the later term abortions, they dilate and then they extract the D and E. The D, I like to call it D and E, and dilation and extraction. They open it up and they go into their tools and they pull the kid out piece by piece. They say partial birth abortion is more humane because they're not pulling the kid out piece by piece. But tell the whole story, fellas. It's you're quartering the backs of those children. You're taking the parts. Who's kidding who? You're using the whole person for research. Tell the whole truth. They say it's less of a difficulty for the mother because you're pulling the whole child out rather than going in blind, ripping the kid apart, etc., etc., etc. When we're talking about outlawing partial birth abortion procedure, it's the wrong answer, my friends. I'm not for it. Partial birth abortion gave us clearly a victim that was visible, bothered the conscience of the nation. The conclusion should have been, this is a child of God and should not and must not be killed in this way or any other way. What we're doing is we're saying, kill the kid the other way. Why? Dilation and extraction. Not while we can see the kid. Bring the kid behind the doors and shoot him. Don't bring him out here. Is that not what we're doing? We're not stopping the death of one single child. We're stopping them killing it in the way that bothers us. That's all. We're outlawing the procedure, not abortion. You ever think of that? meaningless. Let the kid be seen. Bother the nations of the people. This kid nor any other kid should not be killed, okay? In these manners. Okay. Okay, so let me finish this. Okay. They put the seaweed in, and they tell the mother, once the procedure has started, you cannot stop it, or you could die. That is a lie. Can the laminaria, the sticks, be taken out? Yes, they can. Yes, they can. I had one Jewish girl. She was in the afternoon, was trying to convince her to take the sticks out. She didn't do it. She had the sticks in. 1 o'clock in the morning, she has a conversion. I mean, please. She calls me 1 o'clock in the morning, Dan. And I had to go to the hospital with her 1:30 in the morning to get the sticks out of this Jewish girl. The little Jewish boy was born, you see? Why couldn't you have the conversion during the day? It was so unthoughtful with you, you see? But anyway, but she did. And we had the sticks out and the kids running around. It's a lie. But they tell them that. They lie. In other words, they tell them, once the procedure has started with the laminaria, you can't turn around. You can turn it around. You can take the sticks out. You just give the mother a day or two bed rest so things will close up and heal so you can carry the child to term. Okay. At any rate, what happens then is you're telling the mother that, did you know that this is what they're going to do with the woman inside? Now, as you're doing that, at the same time that you're telling her this, you say, Okay, so what we do now is, you got it simply. Did you know, this is what the child looks like from mother's inside. Did you know this is what your feet look like when you were 10 weeks? Did you know, okay? This is what's going to happen to the child. Okay? And you say, look, no matter how difficult things are, Mom, no matter how difficult things are, don't let anyone do this to your child. And no matter how difficult, you're admitting now, how difficult it is, it's the wrong answer for the child and for you. Right? Because as soon as you do it, you're going to regret it. And those mothers inside, they're going to regret it. But I tell you this, when they come back out, we will be here for them and tell them about God's mercy and God's love and how they don't have to go down this path again, and next time how to choose life. Now, having done that, you're talking to a woman in our society, in our times, 50% chance she already had an abortion. And you opened up this whole can of worms, okay? What you have to do now is say, now is the time that you can deal with a previous abortion. And when you do, you're 70% chance home already set to save the child in her womb. If you don't, you're going to have a difficult time saving the next child, this child. Okay, so you say, look, Mom, look, I don't know, you might yourself have gone into this hole, down this route of having an abortion, but Mom, there is hope, there's forgiveness. You, once you know the truth, you don't repeat it. I'll tell that to the mom, I tell it to you. And they will tell you, incredible, yes, first time they're telling anybody, yes, I had 2, 3, 5, 10 previous abortions. Okay? And they've been just suffering like hell, trying to justify it and so forth, you see? And they finally let it out. And you talk about God's mercy and God's love and how we start fresh and start new. You see? And you, and everything begins to change. Everything begins to change. You see? So then we end up, we give them material, we end up saying, look, Mom, to do this, you can't do it by yourself. You need God's help. Can I give you a rosary? This is how to pray the rosary. Do you have any children? Well yes. Do you teach them their catechism? They say, look at you. I said, here, take this catechism. Okay, we have a catechism here. See, and we bring out the catechism, and let me see if I have it here. After a while, okay. This is Penny Catechism. Mother Teresa of Calcutta used this all over the world. Guess where it came from? The Monastery of the Precious Blood. And the guy who produced it, she's clever. She said to the fellow, she said, look, you shouldn't charge for this. I want you to give it for nothing. Okay? God will bless it. She said, okay, Mother Teresa. She said, okay, I'll take $100,000. Oh, that woman. Incredible. Incredible. See? And the guy didn't. He never charged. Never charge, you see. And she, her sister's used it all over the world. Okay? But she's a clever woman. I had the privilege of knowing her, you know, which is great, see. And she, her and her sisters prayed for the helpers. She was one of my spiritual supporters, you know. I say to them, do you teach your children their catechism? And they look at it, and I look at this catechism, and I said, this catechism is defective that I picked up. Isn't that amazing? It starts at page 4. This is incredible. This is true. What is this? There has to be. Where is it? It can't be. Got to be. Where is it? There. Oh, there. There it is. Okay, here we are. See? Unbelievable. The devil did this to me here. Okay. I say to them, look, do you teach your children catechism? What do you mean? I said, well, who made you? They look at you. Who made you? I said, why did God make you? You know, why did God make you instead of someone else? See? Okay, and they begin to think. And you start to, I say, you teach your children the catechism. Do you pray with your children? You take the rosary for you and your child. Start a family rosary. I said, are you living with the fella? And you say, well, yes. I said, are you married? Well, no. I said, wait a second. I said, you go home and tell that guy. Okay? You go home and tell that guy. It's rather simple. You say to him, look, I don't until you say I do. Okay, period. That's it. You see? Rather simple. All right? Rather simple. Straightforward. I don't until you say I do. If he won't say I do, he doesn't love you. Dump him. He'll have you back here again. You see? You deserve someone that will stand by you and support you. Okay? And don't be a fool. If I said to do that, you need God. You need to start praying. See? So it would be an end up that they have rosaries. We give them rosaries. How to say the catechism. You're evangelizing them. You're trying to give them hope. If they're living with the fellow, you got to get it blessed by the church. Have you been away from confession? Got to get you back. You see, in other words, you're treating the whole person. You're doing the work of the church, and the most disposed audience you're going to get, the better the people in church. People in the church always look at the watches. How long is it going to talk? You see, they're not. They'd have you talk there forever, you see? Because someone finally meets them that's feeling with love and compassion and understanding and thinks that they're important. And they may not have even had that all their life. Yes. Yeah, it's amazing. We had the Baptists in Nashville, Tennessee take part in our vigil a couple of weeks ago. They're ready to go. They want to use the whole thing for that. But anyway, okay, now, just to close this. 5 minutes. 5 minutes. Who is she? She keeps coming in here. Who is this woman? Okay. We're going to conclude here, okay? So what you're doing is, at the end here, is you're giving you all this material. You see? And the whole atmosphere has changed. Now she has the catechism, she has the rosary, she has the material. She says we're going to pray for her. Let her go inside. You don't tell her to go inside, but don't panic. She's coming back out. And when she goes back in, you say, we'll be here praying for you, Mom. We're trusting. Okay? You have our prayers. Okay? You know we'll be here. Right? So when she goes back in, what happens is this, the mother, okay, the mother, she goes in and all they want to know is how you're gonna pay for this. So you get on the assembly line. There's no God in there. You see, the whole spirit is different. And the contrast is enormous. And it's important. Why is it important? I said 96% of our turnarounds are people go into the clinic and come back out. That's very helpful because they are coming from situations of real problems, and they're sort of glamorizing or imagining that if they go to the clinic, it's going to be paradise and solve all their problems. When they go in there and they have the contrast between the two spirits, they come back out from depression back out to hope. So when they go back to their difficulties, they're not going to rush back to where it was depression. You see, whereas if they don't go in to start with at all, when they go back home, they start to imagine, I should have gone through with it. It would have solved all the difficulties I'm now experiencing. See? And you agree with them and that what you're asking them to do is not easy. It is difficult. But there's loads of help for them. You see all these places on the front cover here? These are real. They will help you. Whether it be financial, whether it be with medical coverage, whether it be people giving you cribs, clothing, baby care, if you need a place. You're not alone. There's help for you. Okay, we will help you. If you had a previous abortions, we'll work you through that. Okay, if you've been away from church, we got to get you back. If you haven't stopped praying, you got to start praying. Let's turn your whole life around today. Let's make hell heaven. Okay, let's make Golgotha the place where Jesus was crucified and where he rose from the dead. Okay, you turn the place of death into the place of the resurrection, and everything begins to happen. Okay, it's marvelous, wonderful work, because God is doing it through you, with you, and in you. And you'll be amazed at what happens, okay, at these spots. So we'll, I guess, conclude with that. Okay, thank you. We have these videos that we would send to people that want them. We have the pictures up here of the groups around the world. You will take a look at before we put it all away. Okay. Okay. Great. Okay. Great. If you haven't signed the sheet, please sign it. Okay.
I just have a question for you. Did you by chance meet either the Crusaders for Christ or Missionaries of the Eucharist in New York?
Sure they did. They were at the monastery.
Okay, because my brother Phil, he took part in both of those. And I remembered your name. So.
Sure, he was there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. The good group. Good group. Beautiful. Yes, sure, absolutely. Great. Okay, great. Great. God bless you. Great. God bless you. Beautiful. What's your name again?
James.
James. God bless you, James. Okay. Beautiful. Okay. Hang in there, and God will use you as his instrument. Absolutely. God bless you, James. Those pictures are incredible, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yes, sir. See, he's creating a museum of the modern day Holocaust. Yeah. And it's always powerful. It's being done in Austria, the museum. Okay.
Here's Barbara.
I had a question. I know there wasn't time, but what do you think of the Chicago method?
You mean Joe Scheibler's?
Yes.
Oh my God, it's a dinosaur. He knows. He knows. In other words, he was doing that method, okay?
Uh-huh.
And he wasn't being that successful, okay?
Oh, he wasn't.
They have the Helpers of God Special Exhibit in his office, you know that.
No.
The Helpers of God Special in Chicago, right out of Joe, it's right out of Joe Scheibler's office.
Oh.
Julie McCreevy runs it. What happened was Joe was out there with his bullhorn,
right.
Okay? And he was and he was emphasizing malpractice suits, you know, the whole time, the Chicago method, see?
Right.
I said, Joe, throw away your bullhorn, put a rosary in it, okay, you'll do much better. So he said, well, I'd like to learn your method. So I said, okay, I'll come out and explain it to you, see? He said, no. He says, we want to come to the monastery. And his wife and his staff, Tim Murphy and Julie McCreevy, the whole crowd, see?
Right.
So six of them came in, and they spent about 3 days, 4 days with us, okay, being trained. And this is a true story. Sister Dorothy Rother and myself were at the same clinic. He went down, and that day there were 82 people went into the clinic for an abortion. 82. Okay. Oh, you better believe it. This 82. So what happened was he's in the prayer pen observing, but he's putting God on. It's testing God. Okay. This one woman came. She had this black like motorcycle jacket on. She was a rough looking soul. Okay. And he said, if Monsignor could get her, I believe. And she said, get out of my face, you know. She's going in, you see, I've got to step and walk all over, you know. I think she could. but I just still said some things to her and so forth. So he's there. And later on, okay, she comes back out, and the prayer group was praying. He's up there. And she comes back out, and she doesn't come over to me and give me a big kiss. Right in his presence, okay? This is God's truth that you wrote about. A big kiss, see? And you got to keep the child, see? And then it ended up that another Russian girl came. And they're tough, the Russians, okay? If we turn a Russian around, we call it two babies. they're tough, see? So he said, okay, if Sister Dorothy can get that Russian girl, I'll believe, see? And the Russian girl came out later crying and embraced Sister Dorothy, see? So it went on and on. At the end of the day, we had like 39 abortions, okay? But we had 37 turnarounds.
Crazy.
See? And that was it. After that, he said, come. So I did the first prayer vigil at Albany Clinic in Chicago. That took place.
How long ago did he go to New York to do this?
Well, it must be...
See, I didn't realize that had happened.
Oh, sure. That was his conversion.
Would this be years ago? Or?
Yeah, that would be maybe in the 90s. Maybe.
Really?
Could be, yeah.
Interesting.
Could be in the 90s,
because
yeah.
Because there's... Barb and I have talked about it. There's a couple here that go to a Dearborn clinic in Detroit, and they... Use his old method.
See, the fact is this. Here's the secret. He talks still about his old method. But the method that's being used out of there is to help with the God's Precious Infants, which is in that office. So he talks about the old method to give it an identity, but in reality they're using the helper's approach outside the clinics. Mm-hmm. And the prayer vigils and the counseling. And Julie McCreevy is the one who is there in his office running the helpers. See,
well, in his video, he has a DVD of a training, and in the DVD they show people praying.
Of course, the whole thing, I'm telling you. There is this idea.
Is this a current DVD?
No,
it was
2002.
Oh, well, maybe it
wasn't.
He used to emphasize, you know, it was like in your face type thing, very aggressive, and he also would emphasize malpractice suits. They would do research. Yeah.
Couple in Dearborn did.
Well, see, now this is what Ed Miller did originally with the abortionists that we have been going after. He got all this information. It's awful. He lost his license four times.
Right. But the fact is this, okay, you can try to put him out of business by suing him, okay? But the average woman that's coming, she doesn't care if it's the devil himself. You say that he's malpractices. They're not thinking about that.
But
they're just thinking about getting.
They are having some success.
But the other problem is they just go to Planned Parenthood. I mean, I'm there at Planned Parenthood, and they're like, oh, we were just at Dr. Alexander's office.
It's not a conversion of heart.
It's not a conversion of heart.
You see, and this is the difference. You see, so even at that, you know, many of them won't believe you. They're going to go in anyway, but you still haven't converted their heart.
Exactly.
Did they go elsewhere? Thanks for letting us know. We'll go to Planned Parenthood. You see, anyways, it's not the same as see. Anyways, there's no short. They want you in the next. You want these people next door? Right, go. Okay, God bless you. Okay.
Well, this is very enlightening because I've used that Chicago method.
See, in other words,
I have turned away.
Right. But for example, they put out No Greater Love, the video, using the Chicago method. No Greater Joy.
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, sure, I know. Yes. Right. Yeah. Yes, but you see, the emphasis on that was there's two problems. Okay, the emphasis was on malpractice. The reality is they're giving out rosaries. Okay, that's the thing which is the key. And the other thing that was lacking in that video, but he knew it, but it was too late. He said to turn it when he asked me the critique of it. You see, it doesn't deal with enough with the woman after the abortion.
Right.
You see.
It doesn't show them counseling women after.
No, and that's the key, I said, because 50% of... In other words, if you touch women after the abortion, 100% that's pleasing to God, and 50% of the time you're saving the next baby.
Exactly.
You see? And that's totally missing in it.
Father, last week, saving that, a woman stopped the car, and choose me and live.